Pirate's Pocket to the shores of Orange Beach and all points in between. An insider's perspective on Alabama politics. It's the Jeff Poor Show.
I don't think Hank done it this way.
And welcome to the Jeff Poor Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for being with us on this Monday morning, 251-343-0106. That's the text line. You want to be in touch with the program, all you got to do is text me. Coming up on the program today, we'll kick it off here about a half hour with Shane Stringer, one of our Monday regular state lawmaker from Mobile County. Also on the program this morning, Dale Jackson, WVNN, Yellowhammer News. It's Monday, so we hear from Dale. And then in the 11 o'clock hour, Dick Brubaker will make time for us. So we'll see what he's got to say as we approach primary runoff day. Once again, text line 251-343-0106. We're in Montgomery today. Tonight I'll be moderating a debate. I don't know if Barry Moore is going to show up or not. They just put out the House calendar. And his appearance was really contingent on what was on that calendar, whether or not it would be able to be with reconciliation votes and the possible renewal of FISA, that he needed to be in the chamber for that. But neither one of those seemed to be on the calendar. So I don't know, but I know we will have the AG candidates and the lieutenant gubernatorial candidates tonight. But I'm in Montgomery. If it sounds a little different, that's why we are sounding that way today. Well, we'll kick it off here. The Tommy Tuberville saga continues on. And Coach is, what am I missing here? I'm going to tell you, and this is going to sound a lot like a trip skipper op-ed in AL.com, because he kind of writes the same thing. Trip Skipper was early Tuberville campaign manager. And then they went in a different direction about halfway through that campaign. But when I first got on the radio, it was 2019. I've been on the air for 7 years, 7 years and 6 months now, I guess. I did a year and a half in Huntsville, and I've been on in the station ever since. It was late 2020, like the end of the summer there, that August. When I was in Huntsville, the name of the game was to try to promote the show, but just go to political events. I went to a lot of Republican Party events, things of that sort. And that was about the time you started seeing Tommy Tuberville around a lot. You started seeing him around Alabama, at all over North Alabama for certain. The Shoals to the Shoals to Huntsville, over to Jackson County, Sand Mountain. It's been 7 years, and I don't know where he was calling home. We always assumed it was Auburn because they would always talk about going back to Auburn. And then late in the campaign, they had this bus that broke down that he was riding around in. But the home port was always Auburn. Here it is. It is June 8, 2026. And I know for a fact that I've been seeing him around Alabama for 7 years. I am downplaying the importance of this, but by technical definition, it seems like he's been in the state for 7 years. And knowing something about this, so we had dual residences for a while. My wife is in law school at Tallahassee at Florida State. And I was spending most of my time in Huntsville. But when you pay your taxes, the way we were told to do it was break it down by the income you earned in one state, the income you earned in another state. And when I saw the Lanyap story and they had the barcode and it showed, you know, the unredacted version of Tommy Tuberville's tax returns, but it didn't show it. They described it. What was the smoking gun? Did he had rental property in Florida that he was paying Florida taxes on? And residuals from a movie that he paid Alabama taxes on? And, but I know in 2019, he probably wasn't working. He was running for United States Senate. It's not a paying job. So I maybe I missed this. Somebody can explain this to me, and I've gone over it. It's a complicated thing. Is anybody buying it that Tommy Tuberville is just disqualified? That he can't be governor of Alabama? So if you haven't been keeping up with this, there's a part of the Alabama Constitution that says to be governor, to be lieutenant governor, 7 years residency. They put this in 1901. There were still some hard feelings about the Civil War and Reconstruction and the carpetbaggers who came in, held elected office. And they wanted to do that to keep that, I don't know, that was in the back of their mind. Don't ask me. It's 1901 Alabama. What do you expect? And I tell everybody this. It's 7 years residence to be governor, not to run for governor. That's the Alabama Constitution. Look, you can vote against him because you believe that he spends too much time in Florida, that he goes to 30A to Santa Rosa Beach. That's perfectly fine. But we're trying to meet a technical legal definition here. And like I said, maybe I'm just missing it. I think he's qualified to be governor. He certainly will be when he puts his takes the oath of office next January. He'll be pushing 8 years here. But I could go back and look at, like, I was writing for Yellowhammer News still, and I was writing stories about his Senate run, and he got started very early. Y'all remember, the earliest, I think, out of the gate was Bradley Byrd. And then we started hearing from people, I think it was Sean Spicer and others, who were talking about Tuberville and how great he was going to be on the campaign trail. So shortly thereafter, you started seeing him at places, these Republican Club meetings, everywhere. And then he followed the FEC, and there he is. Now, they tried to make an issue out of this. Jeff Sessions did. Late in the 2020 cycle, if you remember, Jeff Sessions was in the runoff against Tommy Tuberville. They ran ads. They didn't land. And it becomes this. I think the casual observer looks at it and says, we did this already. We did this in the Senate race. Not really thinking about any stipulation in the Constitution of Alabama. But we litigated this. We voted on this. And he overwhelmingly won. And what was it? I mean, you know, like, what is it about Tommy Tuberville to get some voters to the polls to pull the lever for him? And it's the culture. It's a football coach kind of culture. People trust a football coach. They think that there's some values, teamwork, work ethic. And he does it really well. He got to the highest levels of collegiate sports. And he marries it with your populist politics of the day. And it just works for him. and he wins. And the Florida thing, it came up, and they still voted for him. So we got that. We also have this bubbling underneath the surface, so we'll spend some time on it later. We talked about this on the show last week, Barry Moore's military service. And I've looked at it from like five different angles now. And essentially what I've come to find out is it's National Guard service paired with IRR service, maybe. But that's how they arrive at the 6 years. Apparently, he was some kind of cadet. So I think he technically meets the definition of a veteran. It's not so, this is the difference, though. It's not something he's really run on. It's not something that Barry Moore has, like, hung his hat on. Now, it's on his campaign literature. It's on his yard signs, some of them. But it's not like he's out there. I mean, obviously, Jared Hudson, a Navy SEAL, that's a big part of his resume. But this hasn't been a big part of Barry Moore's resume. But I suspect we'll hear more about this. I think they're probably going to go up on air with some TV ads or something. But it still feels at this point, I mean, guys got to remember he won the primary plurality by like 15 points. He always underpolls. The polling in this state right now is so bad. It's just, it's a hard state to poll, and B, there's a lot of chatter and noise clouding it because a lot of the polls are just meant for publicity, meant to try to steer the race in a certain way. So you don't really, it's hard to get a really straight up assessment of what's going on in Alabama in this U.S. Senate race. But regardless of whatever happens, you also got to wonder, is it too late? Is this baked in? I think what's going to happen, this is what happened in the primary night before, that Monday night before people went to vote. They got a robocall from Donald Trump. And I think that moved numbers for John Wall, for Barry Moore, maybe even Tommy Tuberville, the three endorsed candidates. You got to get another True Social post. You already got one over the weekend for Barry Moore. So you got to be ready for that if you're Jared Hudson. Now, Jared Hudson has some momentum. He is the sort of the guy of the moment right now. Politico Playbook on Saturday morning did a big write-up of him. Nothing too troubling, I guess, for Barry Moore. But when I saw it, I thought, well, there are already people in Washington, D.C. who are getting ready for Senator Barry Moore. Do they see this, or do they think twice about that? Text line, we'll get to your text here in just a moment. 251-343-0106. This is the Jeff Poore Show on FM Talk 106.5. The Jeff Poore Show at FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for being with us on this Monday morning. 251-343-0106. You want to be in touch with the program, that's what you got to do. You got to hit me up on the text line. I don't know, DI texture, what you're referring to here. Tell your radio reporter 1892 she should just sit to run. Mike. Sorry, mommy. She's still on the banned list, buddy, but maybe if you're a good boy, it will bring you back. Mike writes, it was a rough weekend for American patriotism and soccer national team showed up to play Germany in LGBT pride jerseys in D-Day on D-Day and lose. Then Trump says he's in control and has called and told BB not to react to Iran's retaliation for bombing Beirut. And Netanyahu basically told Trump to kick rocks because Israel is who's really controlled Groundhog Day all over and over again. Let's see. Jerry doesn't like Rob. Old guy. I think he is not primarily a politician. Tuberville, Trump, Fetterman, it gets people out, people who don't do polls. I think you're right about some of these guys. I don't know about Tuberville. I mean, because he dominates his elections, and so does he underpoll? It's never really been tested because, I mean, I'd have to go back and look at maybe the 2020 Republican primary. Now, what I recall from that was we expected Jeff Sessions to do really well at the Birmingham market. And what it ended up happening was Tommy Tuberville dominated the Birmingham DMA. He didn't do as well in our area. If you look at that, Bradley Byrne had everything from Conecuh County South. And Conecuh County wasn't even at the time in his congressional district. And Tommy Tuberville did not do well in Mobile and Baldwin County at all. But everywhere else, he did pretty well. But in the end, it was Jeff Sessions who got into the runoff. Barry Moore underpolls. All these Trump candidates who identify with that brand underpoll. And maybe it's just a distrust of surveys. There's something really in the phenomenon here. And then what I understand, and I haven't put this to test. I'm not a pollster, by the way, but that Hudson kind of overpolls. And why do you think that is? And the explanation that's been given to me is, you know, it's an enthusiasm thing. It's like people want to tell you that they are big time Jared Hudson people, which is a good thing to have. Don't get me wrong, but and the other thing with him, and you could probably give him credit for this, he's very good at social media. So these text polls, these online surveys, because he has a very good digital game, it works in that arena. Now, but does it translate to votes? Unnamed texter, I see where Crybaby Denny Hamlin won the race yesterday. I'm done with NASCAR. No need to watch anymore since we lost Kyle Busch. I keep up with it casually. It's not really it's nothing like it used to be. There's still something kind of cool about Daytona in February at the 500, any Talladega race, Bristol, but the personalities, it's a sport, and I know we're in this isn't even sports ball, but it's something that I think it went from a phenomenon driven by the fans who show up, who go to these events, who pack the stands, and then they turned it into a made-for-TV event. And the stands aren't as full. The personalities are kind of cookie-cutter. Jerry, we deserve everything we get in this part of the state for voting for Bradley. 251-343-0106. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Poore Show on FM Talk 106.5.
Son, you don't have to fight to be a man. There's someone for everyone.
Mason-Dixon line fits my life, oh, so right.
Staying with us on this Monday morning. Text line, you need to be in touch with me, your show host, 251-343-0106. Still got a bunch of texts to get to. We'll get to those over the course of the program. Joining us now on the line, we do this every other Monday. Always a pleasure to bring on my next guest, State Representative Shane Stringer. Representative, good morning. How are you?
Hey, doing great, Jeff. Thank you for having me on.
Hey, thank you for making time for us. We always appreciate it. Well, it's election time, and I guess the question I'd have for you, there's a bunch of stuff on the ballot. You don't have to, I don't know if you've endorsed or what, you know, any of that, but tell me this. Let's start with this. Since you're in this space, what are you looking for in this AG's race, you think?
Well, I don't know, candidate Mitchell too well, but, you know, I've worked with Robinson over the years, so. You know, I think both of them are good people, and, you know, I'm not sure which way that one's going to go. I hadn't really kept up with it or looked at the polls or anything, but I think Alabama's going to be good with, you know, either one of the candidates that we get on that election.
Well, I mean, and I guess I ask it like this. You're talking to them about criminal justice, policing, those sort of things. Is there something you would like to hear from those guys when we start talking about that topic?
Yeah, the biggest thing is making sure that we're going to support our law enforcement here in Alabama and make sure that we're going to uphold the letter of the law and make sure that, you know, that we're going to continue to fight a good fight on keeping these violent offenders in prison and not releasing them early.
And that's been a problem. And that seems to be more of a problem from the administration that, and it's been used as like a bargaining chip, it seems like, with the Departments of Paroles, apparatus, bureau and board, and not really hasn't. And then, you know, there's also, we just don't have the prison capacity that we need to, have this kind of criminal justice we need in Alabama.
Yeah, absolutely. I know at one point we had to come back and change the laws on the good time that we were allowing inmates to have. And basically we were allowing the Department of Corrections to handle that. And, you know, they were self-correcting, I guess, by giving too much good time to try to alleviate some of their problem, which is overcrowding. And that was not a good solution. And the legislature had to go back and change the laws and, you know, address that issue. And, you know, every time we turn around, there's always someone bringing legislation trying to decrease the amount of time they serve or let them out early, you know, good behavior, different stuff. And that's just not good practices. We have got to make sure that we're holding those accountable that are out here victimizing our state.
It's the, and you've seen this, you know, one time is one time too many. Where we let someone out early, they give them a very generous, good time release or whatever, or even like work release you hear sometimes. But there's always just what appears to me to be like a lack of institutional control at times. And in the meantime, you look at the hallways in the legislature, and it's not. There's a few activists, the one that vocal and people like that, but generally speaking, Representative, it's people just trying to get more people out of prison.
Yeah, it don't make sense to me. You know, I even had one legislator tell me a couple of years ago that the only way that we were going to reduce crime in Alabama is to start releasing some of these inmates. And I never could get him to explain that, you know, that thought process. But, you know, the fact is, there's a lot more to the criminal justice system than people realize or see. A lot of times these people that are finally convicted and sent to prison have been arrested, you know, 10, 15, 20 times before we finally are able to get them sentenced and sent to prison. And that's been a problem. And, you know, we're constantly working against the revolving door and trying to keep these inmates in that need to be in. And it's almost like at times they're begging us to put them in jail and prison. And, you know, you give them probation, you give them good behavior, you give them youthful offender, you give them everything in the world, and yet they go right back out and do violent offenses. And that's just, you know, makes no sense. And then at some point, we have got to do our job and lock these people up and keep them locked up.
Well, it's Jay Towne, who's the prosecutor in North Alabama, or former prosecutor, says it's hard to get put in prison in Alabama. Like, you really got to screw up pretty bad to go serve time in an Alabama prison. And the reason he says that, and when he explains, is like, these are people, we're not just like punishing low-level drug offenders or whatever the mythology is of the day, that these are truly people worthy of prison time, needing prison time, needing, you know, whatever the system can throw at it to try to correct some of the behavior, that it's not just an overreach of state government or something.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I'm going on my 35th year in law enforcement, and I've seen it time and time again. And like I said, a lot of times it's almost like these criminals are begging us to do something, you know, to send them where they want to be, which I guess is prison. But you go in and, you know, you got somebody that's done 20 home invasions or 20 burglaries or 20 robberies or something that serious. And, you know, we're reducing it down. The courts are reducing it down to some lesser offense or not as much. And, you know, they're getting a lot less time there. But then they go to prison and they want to give them good behavior and add, you know, time that they can get out early with that. And then we want to push the parole board to parole these people early. You know, before it's said and done, they really have not been punished appropriately for the crimes that they have committed.
What's your outlook here? Do you think, and I know we took it from an election question to a criminal justice topic discussion, but are we finally going to get a handle, you think, under Tuberville? It's going to take the legislature, but even if it's just something in writing, dealing with the prisons and the capacity and the problems there in this next administration?
I think it's going to take quite a while to fix. I definitely think that he's got his getting his head wrapped around it and working toward a solution. I've already heard there's talks going on, you know, to deal with our Department of Corrections. And, you know, I think he's going to have his hands full. It's a lot to do. It ain't happened overnight, and it ain't going to be fixed overnight, but we've got to start somewhere. And I think, you know, we've got to quit kicking the can down the road, and we've absolutely got to meet this challenge head on and see what we can do to try to fix it or, you know, make it better anyway.
Well, and I mean, like, it's a problem, and like, there's just things that aren't going to change that are problems with, you know, criminality in Alabama and having to take bad people and put them somewhere. But what is kind of in the way here, there's something that could be changed, that could be fixed, is the Department of Corrections. And it just seems like it's this corrupt bureaucracy from the bottom up. I mean, we know the prison guard situation and the constant battles with contraband, and it's the guards a lot of times who are enabling what's going on there, and things like that. It's just getting a handle on the bureaucracy itself, and that's something you would expect out of the governor, I would think.
Yeah, I think there's been some steps in the right direction over the last few years to address some of that issues. And, you know, the new prison, I had a chance to go visit that back during the special session, and it's coming along good. And I think that's going to be, you know, a major step in the right direction, but that ain't going to be the solution to it all. You know, I don't know, whoever is tasked with running our Department of Corrections are going to have to take a out of the box approach. And, you know, I don't know exactly what's going to be the solution there, but I do think that, you know, whatever it takes, if you have to bring in the National Guard and attack it from one prison to the next to get things under control and make sure that there's no contraband being brought in by correction officers or any other, you know, people that are contractors with our prison system. So there's, you know, just going to take a lot of work and It's going to take somebody with a lot of energy to get in there and try to tackle this.
Joined by State Representative Shane Stringer here on the program. I guess we haven't talked since, but Supreme Court coming out with its decisions that it will be indeed be the 6-1 map and things will proceed as they are supposed to. You feel good about where it's at because it does impact your district.
Yeah, absolutely. I suspected that it was going to go that way. It was just going to have to be a process that we were going to have to work through. But yeah, I'm excited about it. I'm glad that we were able to accomplish that. Looking forward to the upcoming elections and, you know, see what we can accomplish there. But I had a feeling it was going to go our way eventually.
Yeah, and I don't buy this, that there's confusion, that no one really knows what's going on. I mean, I think, Representative, that I mean, people are pretty smart. They're pretty coached up on this stuff. They'll figure it out.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, that's just the left trying to use that as an excuse for anything and everything. I think that people are smart. They know what's going on. They're paying attention, and, you know, they're going to come out and vote, and, you know, they're going to let their voices be heard through their votes.
Yeah, and, you know, that they'll know when to vote, and they'll know when to go and vote, and there's no, like, oh, I don't know. Am I supposed to vote on, you know, next Tuesday, or am I supposed to wait till August 11th? None of that was ever really. It was just like you said. It's the left trying to kind of cloud things. But Mobile being back in the first congressional district in its entirety is kind of an important thing.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we've demanded that from day one. You know, we didn't appreciate the way it was handled and what was done. And, you know, we have fought tooth and nail to make sure that our voters are heard, and they were, and we're looking forward to the upcoming elections and let the people's voices be heard. I don't think, you know, I know that our voters are not as misunderstood as, you know, the liberals would like us to believe, but we'll show them that in the next upcoming election.
You feel like 7-0 is around the corner next year, or what are you hearing on that?
Yeah, I think so. I think, you know, that's what we're hearing from Coach, and I think he's in the catbird seat of governor. So unless something, you know, happens, I suspect that that's what we're going to be looking at in the near future.
Because it just wasn't enough time in this special session, and then I get it, but it's not something that we talked to Senator Elliott about this Friday. I don't think we'll wait till 2030. I mean, do you see that scenario playing out?
No, absolutely not. I think that you're going to see the legislature get on their game and start working on this immediately. And, you know, I think we'll be addressing it soon.
Yeah, and then, you know, the getting everybody back in the same congressional district, that it's this idea that we all have these same communities of interest. Now, the lower court said that this was, you know, the race trumped all of that. But you start looking at it and having one congressman, and you could start talking about some of these things that you want done in your district. And I always think of Highway 45. We see, you know, that's a federal road. You get some kind of federal matching. I mean, that's the way that's got to be done. Then some of that's just going to have to be the approach the Tuberville administration takes. But having one congressman, one congressional district, and that, it just makes more sense for that to be something that's more of a Mobile-centric function.
Yeah, absolutely. I think we're headed in the right direction. I've had some talks with Senator Britt and with Senator Tuberville in reference to Highway 45, and I think we're headed in the right direction. We're working on some stuff as we speak, and, you know, we're gonna keep fighting and being the squeaky wheel until we get something done.
Well, that's such a big part of it, you know, getting Governor Tuberville's attention on it, because this administration, and here we're on the tail end of it, but it turned out to be what we thought all along. It's just going to take a new governor to start looking at some of these things. And it's not so much like, okay, Tommy Tuberville gets elected and you expect the bulldozers to start, you know, or you expect the right of way to be attained and the bulldozers to start clearing land. It's just, we're not even talking about widening 65, where we're putting some of these big projects on hold. And I know that there's finite resources, but at least get them on the table to be discussed.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that, you know, from what I'm hearing, that Senator Tuberville's, you know, already working on a lot of stuff and preparing, getting everything ready for when or if he is elected. And I think he's getting his game plan together and actually doing a lot of hard work ahead of the race. And, you know, so I think once he wins, he's going to be able to hit the ground running, and he's going to be, you know, be able to start addressing some of these major issues across the state immediately.
Representative, we'll leave it there. We always appreciate your time, and we'll do it again in a couple of weeks.
Sounds good. Thank you so much, Jeff.
All right. State Representative Shane Stringer there. Let's get a timeout in here. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Porter Show on FM Talk 106.5.
Yes, there were times I'm sure you knew when I bit off more than I could chew. But through it all, when there was doubt,
like a
back to the Jeff Porter Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for staying with us on this Monday morning. 251-343-0106. You want to be in touch with the program, all you do is text me. We'll start with, old guy. If your primary attribute is Navy SEAL, brings to mind Dan Crenshaw. Well, he's done some other things. Covenant Rescue Group. Mostly good things about that. I don't know, and he's ran a decent campaign. Look, I'm going to say this. I mean, not many people gave him a shot. When Tommy Tuberville announced he was going to run for governor, not for reelection, and remember it, I was filing the story. I was in Auburn. He did it at the barbecue place there. And Byron Smokehouse, and I kept getting texts, hey, you need to watch Jared Hudson. He's going to run for Senate. And you know, it's like, well, that's interesting. And the kind of the takeaway is, what's he doing? I mean, he finished second in a sheriff's race in Jefferson County. But here we are sitting here today, like a year and a half later, and he's still in the running. He defeated a statewide candidate in Steve Marshall to get to where he is. So I think the Navy SEAL thing is kind of the foot in the door, but he's ran a decent campaign. He got to where he is. Squirrel Vereen, speaking of pride, where are the vocal and disgruntled or an 1819 news story about Mobile putting up Pride Month banners, including banners that were official city printings and banners donated by a local gay group leader? Daphne has American flags on its light poles. You know, I guess I need to see it for myself or get somebody over there, but that's interesting. Because I thought we had already litigated this about gesture celebrating Pride Month. Every June, we do this. I don't know. They wouldn't allow. It's not so much what you find to be objective. I mean, objectionable. That's a very subjective thing. But we apply a rule here. And do you remember the dust up over the Confederate flag? People didn't want that up. And they said, fine, we'll take it down. Why is this any different? Not that the two are necessarily the same at all, but if a number of people in your community don't want to see it, and we're going to apply this standard to Confederate imagery, why wouldn't we apply it to LGBTQ imagery? Assuming now, I don't know, Scroll Vereen, because people may want this stuff up in Mobile. Maybe not in this audience. I mean, it's something we need to get old, our buddy Travis Johnson on to talk about. 251-343-0106. Let's get a break in here. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Poore Show on FM Talk 106.5.
Have a good time. And then one day a wealthy customer bought the Indian maid. He took her oh so